Gary snuck in there. So, okay. Well, tonight we are going to get back into Job. We're going to be in Job 9 and 10, a very adventurous undertaking. We'll see how far we get. So listen quickly. But I want to catch us up a little bit. And I want you to put yourself in the mind of Job and in Job's place just for a little bit. You've had it all. You've lost it all. You've lost your family, except for your wife. You've lost all your possessions. You've lost all your prosperity. You are sitting on a trash heap. Your best friends in the world, the three of them, have come to you. And so far, the two of them have done nothing but put you down. And you know in your heart that you have done nothing. You have no unconfessed sin in your life. God has forgiven you of your sin. And you know that you've done nothing to, quote, deserve what's going on in your life. What are you thinking? What would be your earnest desire, the biggest thing you would want to do if you were Job? Okay, but yeah, we want to ask why, but who are you going to ask it to? Well, okay, and Keith's answer was, well, I would say God, but what's the but?
But I would think, but he's put me into this predicament or allowed this predicament.
All right. So you want to talk to God. Can you see God?
No.
Can you touch God?
No.
But do we have a, as Penny said, a mediator that we can touch? We do. So I want you to put yourself in Job's spot and understand, because we're going to get to this verse, these verses today, where Job basically says, and he doesn't name Jesus Christ by name. He will actually do that later, as you remember. But today he's going to tell us, I need Jesus Christ. And what is it that's so special about Jesus Christ that would help us in this situation? You already got one word. He's human and he's a mediator. What good would that do? And you can talk to him face to face. He understands. What good is it that he would be a mediator?
He also
very good. So understand, this is what Job is going to get to today. And this is an amazing, if you think about this being the oldest book in the Bible and God using what we call progressive revelation. You know, when Jonas, when you started taking math, your mom did not start you out at algebra, did she? Now, she started you out with 1 plus 1 equals 2. 2 plus 2 usually equals 4, not always, but sometimes, right? So you started out in those little steps, and you built up, right? Then we got to multiplication, division, and all that kind of thing. That's the way God's revelation is. But understand what these things that Job is going through, you'll see today. The oldest book in the Bible, he's already hit on the idea of a man that he can talk to, who would understand what he's going through. And he's already hit on the idea of, boy, do I wish I had a mediator. Do I wish I had somebody that could talk to God and talk to me at the same time and sort of understand both of us and get where we're both coming from. Does that make sense? Okay, so let's look at this. With that mindset, think, how frustrated are you right now? You're getting ready for two chapters here. Chapters 9 and 10, you're getting ready to talk to Bildad. You're going to respond to Bildad, who basically said last week, if you remember, you get what you deserve. Cosmic theology is you get what you deserve. That theology, if you call it that, is still around today. So what are you feeling? Are you frustrated? Are you mad? What are you feeling? Well, certainly, yeah.
Neglected.
Yeah, you feel neglected. You feel put on. You feel pressured. All right. So think about that, and that's what comes out with Job. Now, we saw his speech in chapter 3 was really rash. He was just flinging it all. He's getting a little more focused today. He's getting a little more logical. You can see him getting more and more control over his thoughts. He's starting to arrange them. He's not there yet. And he's not going to be there until he meets God in the whirlwind. But he's going to get much closer to, he's going to start getting much closer today. So let's go to Job 9 and we'll start. And you guys, if you write in your Bibles, that's great, because I want to give you some things to put in there, underline, bracket, just so you understand what's going on with the word. If not, take notes. We got lots of space to take notes. All right, so here we go. Then Job answered. So he's answering Bildad and said, "Truly, I know it is so." And what he's saying here is, I know that's the cosmic philosophy. I know that's what tradition teaches. He's not agreeing with it. He's just saying, yes, I know that is the philosophy that you get what you deserve. So he's saying, I know this traditional system, but in light of that system, how can a man be righteous before God? Under that system, you can't be righteous before God, right? So he goes on and he says, look, he's over and over again wanting to be righteous before God. Understand what his heart's desire is. We talked about how he felt. Does he say, but how can I get all my possessions back? No. Does he say, how can I get my family back? No. He's still saying, I want to be righteous before God. I want to be declared righteous before God. That's his motivating goal. And we will see that throughout all this book. Job keeps focused on God and wanting to understand God, wanting to understand why this is happening to him, as we'll see today, through God, is the way Job acts. So that is very, very important. His goal is still being righteous before God, not simply getting his stuff back. Very, very important. Yep. Yep. That is referring to the explanation of the cosmic system that Bildad gave, which is the you get what you deserve system. He goes, yeah, I know that's what the system teaches. Okay? But how can a man be righteous before God? The key question is, how can I be righteous before God? Look in verse 3. He says, if one wishes to contend with him, contend is a courtroom word. He will actually draw God into court in that whirlwind over in chapter 38. But right now he uses this courtroom term and he says, if one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him one time out of 1,000. Why is that? Because, he's getting ready to explain, understand. He says, if I could get him into court, I couldn't say anything. You hear all these people say, hey, when I get to heaven, I'm going to tell God this. You ain't either. When you get to heaven, you're going to fall down on your face. Everybody who's ever been there, that's all they've done. Even, you know, John, all the people that fall down in Isaiah, that's all they do. We're not going to tell God anything except thank you for bringing me here, you know, glad to be here kind of thing. But he says, if one wished to draw him into the courtroom, you couldn't do it. We could not answer him one time out of 1,000. Then he starts to explain why. In verse 4, he says, God is wise in heart and mighty in strength. And then he says, who has hardened himself against him and prospered? So who's really argued and taken a stand against him and prospered? What's the answer to that? Nobody, right? So then in verses 5 through 10, he's going to talk about God being the creator. He's going to talk about the strength that God has. These are all things that Job is citing for why he's untouchable. You ever think God's untouchable? Yeah, listen to what Job says. He moves the mountains and they don't know when he overturns them in his anger. He shakes the earth out of its place and its pillars tremble. He commands the sun and it does not rise. He seals off the stars. He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He made the Bear, Orion, and the Pleiades in the chambers of the south. He does great things past finding out, yes, wonders without number. So here he's talking, we saw this in our thematic study. He's talking about God being the creator. But what he's focusing on now is that God is sovereign over everything. That God's in control of everything and God is powerful because he does everything. That makes sense? Now, remember, Job's starting to think here. So if you just realize for the first time, maybe for the first time in your life, that God's in control of everything, what realization did Job just make? We don't know if this is the first time that he's thought this, but what realization do we know for sure he just made? If God's in control of everything and I'm suffering, therefore, well, not maybe not responsible, but he's in control. He's sovereign. And we know he, you kind of know because you peeked at the first chapter. He is responsible. But that's what Job is starting to realize. So he cites, if you'll notice, all these things that are normally very ordered, like a mountain. And then what happens to the mountain? He moves it. The earth is very stable. Then what does God do? He shakes it. The sun rises every day until it doesn't. He seals off the stars. He spreads out the heavens, so he creates the order, and he also creates what?
Chaos.
The chaos, or allows the chaos. So Job is starting to get this. That's a very tough concept. It is very hard for us to understand that God is in control when bad things happen to us. You know, and I asked you this question back when we did lightning. You know, we know God controls the lightning because the Bible tells us that. But yet when I ask you, does God control the lightning when it strikes a 12-year-old child and kills him? We didn't get as many yeses, and we didn't get them as quickly. But the answer is still the same. If God's in control, God's in control. And Job is starting to figure this out. He's going to get more and more of it as we go. But he says, look, I understand you're the creator. I understand you formed everything and you're in control of it. You can shake it up if you want to. Then he comes to verses 11 to 13 and he says, but you know, I got this problem. He says, if he goes by me, I don't see him. If he moves past, I don't perceive him. If he takes away, who could hinder him? Who could say, what are you doing? God will not withdraw his anger. The allies of the proud lie prostrate beneath him. What's he saying here? Well, he's already said that. He's going to the next step here. He's all powerful, but you know what? We can go up. It's hard, but we can go meet the President of the United States. We can go meet the Queen of England, or the King of England now. So those all-powerful people we can go meet. Let's look at what he says in verse 11. If he goes by me, I don't see him. We know that God is what? Spirit. He's spirit. This is what Job's saying. He says, look, I know that God is spirit. I wouldn't see him if he walked past me. What problem does that create for Job, for you? You don't know when he's there, and what else? That's the flip side. Definitely those two. And one more thing. We don't know that he understands. Does he understand what it's like to stub a toe? Well, we know somebody does, don't we? We know Jesus does. Turn over to John 14:9. We got close to that verse this morning. See, Job says, man, you know, I just want to see him. I can't see him. In John 14:9, Jesus is talking, and, you know, Philip this morning said, Lord, just show us the Father. Who's the Father? God, right, Yahweh God. It is sufficient for us. Jesus said to him, have I been with you so long, and yet you have not known me? But now this next part of the verse that I didn't read this morning says this, he who has seen me has seen the Father. So how can you say, show us the Father? So Jesus answers Job's plea, oh, I would love to see the Father. What's Jesus' answer? You have. You've seen me. You guys get that? And think about again, you know, Jesus was tempted in all ways like us so that we would have a high priest who could understand what we were going through. He was tired, he was hungry, he was tempted by anything and everything. He simply did not sin. So that shows us that we can do it. But the reason that that verse keeps coming to mind is that we should understand that he understands what we're going through. There's this movement now. What's it called? He Gets Us or something like that. It's got some good things, but the point, it's sort of accepting of sin. Jesus was never accepting of sin. He understands the temptation that you have. But, you know, be angry and sin not is the key. It's not okay to be angry. But then, you know, what God says is Jesus Christ was God on earth. Jesus said, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I and the Father are one. We're the same person. So we don't ever have to ask that question or think like that about that Job did. Yes, God the Father is spirit, but Jesus Christ was manifest in body. So we can understand. Do you think Jesus knew what it was like to be physically tired? Oh, yes. Do you know what did he know what it was like to work a hard day's work? What was he in life? Carpenter. You know, and they did not have those neat little drills and all those tools we have, all those things we have today. So, but that's what he's saying. So, you know, he got his spirit. I can't touch him. I really can't see him. So over in verse 14, he says, well, how then could I answer him? How could I choose my words to reason with him? How am I going to argue with him? Now, remember, God invited us to argue, didn't he? Isaiah 1:18, come, let us reason together. That word reason is actually argue. What he says is, bring your best argument to me, and I'll deal with it. So God invites us to do this, but Job, you know, Job doesn't get that yet. How then can I answer him and choose my words to reason with him? And he's saying he's too strong for me. Watch this. For though I were righteous, I could not answer him. And I would beg, what? What's that next word?
Mercy.
Mercy for my judge. Okay? So look what Job's saying, and he says this over and over again. You'll see it again. He said, for though I were righteous, remember that word does not mean sinless. It means I'm upright. I'm saying it like it is. And, you know, something's going on in my life, but it's not because I'm sinning. But if I had the opportunity to be in front of the judge, would I present my case? No. What would I do? I would beg for mercy. You understand that? That's what Jesus said. You remember the parable or the story of the publican and the Pharisee? The Pharisee's in church in the temple praying, Lord, I thank you that I'm not like these other men. I fast, I tithe, I do all this great stuff, and thank you, Lord, that I'm not like this tax collector. And he's so proud, right? And Jesus says the tax collector's not even standing up front. He's afar off. He won't even look up. And he beats his chest and he says, Lord, apply your grace to me. Be merciful to me, a sinner. That's what Job's saying he would do. Which one of those two went home justified according to Jesus Christ? The tax collector, that's right. So Job's kind of getting the idea. He said, you know, God's too powerful. Look in verse 16. If I called and he answered me, I would not believe he was listening to my voice, for he crushes me with a tempest. Now he's starting to understand. He multiplies my wounds without cause. He's saying all this stuff that's happening to me is happening because God's doing it. He will not allow me to catch my breath, but fills me with bitterness. If it is a matter of strength, indeed he is strong. And if of justice, who will appoint my day in court? Though I were righteous, my own mouth would condemn me. Though I were blameless, it would prove me perverse. You understand what that's saying? Even though I've got integrity, even though I say things like they are and I stick by my word, I would convict myself of being a guilty sinner by talking. Isn't that what we know? You know, James, watch your tongue. He says, my own mouth would condemn me. We would sit there and we would start talking and we would be either prideful or we would be boastful or we would be condemning. We would be something that's wrong. He says, my own mouth would condemn me. Y'all with me so far? No, we're going quick. Okay. So verse 21, he says, I am blameless, yet I do not know myself. Remember we looked at that verse? I think we did. I know we did in class. 1 John, where if we confess our sins, He is faithful and just to forgive us of those sins that we confess, and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So when we confess known sin, God forgives us of those sins that we don't know. He's going to show us what they are so that we can confess them. But that's what Job says. He says, look, I'm blameless, yet I don't know myself. Peter says that. Paul says that. John says that. They all say things like, you know, I can't even trust my own heart to judge myself. We're kind of biased in that regard, don't you think? We think we're a lot better than we are. And Paul said, you know, I don't even let my own heart decide. Let God decide. And that's what Job's saying. He says, I despise my life. He said that before. It's all one thing. Therefore, I say, remember, Bildad's premise was that God would never do anything to the blameless. Right? Bildad's prosperity gospel taught, if you follow God's word, you will always prosper. We know that's not true. Jesus Christ taught us that wasn't true. But that's what Bildad said. Now, he's getting ready in verse 21 and 22 to completely and directly contradict Bildad. So remember what Bildad said. He says, I am blameless, yet I do not know myself. I despise my life. It is all one thing. Therefore, I say, he destroys the blameless and the wicked. See, Bildad's premise was he only destroys the wicked, which we know is not accurate. Now, this is, again, he's working through this, so give him a little slack when he says God destroys the blameless. But what he's saying is those people that we perceive to be without sin, without blemish, they have bad things happen to them too. And I've just told you that God creates and is in control of everything, so therefore I know, next logical step, that God's doing it in the life of the blameless. Or in our words, he's allowing it in the life of the blameless. Y'all with me? Okay. Well, bad question, but yes. Bad things happen to people that we see as good people. Remember, how many are good? Yeah, that's the first problem. There's only one, Jesus Christ. So when atheists, when unbelievers, when other church members say, I can't believe in God because I don't understand why bad things happen to good people, well, we can start by telling them, well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but there's really not any good people. You know, and then we lead them into the Bible. But that's what, you see where Job's finally getting around to this? He's fighting back against the system. He's told him in verse 1, I know that system, but it's not right because it doesn't recognize God as being sovereign. So verse 23 through 24, we're going to see sovereignty again. He says, if the scourge slays suddenly, he laughs at the plight of the innocent. The earth is given into the hands of the wicked. Do we feel like that today? The earth is in the hands of the wicked. He covers the face of its judges. So why isn't there justice? They're blind. But who covered them? And remember, Job gets told by God, you got it mostly right. Look in this last part of verse 24. If it is not he, who else could it be? That's what it comes down to. If it's not God who's in control, if it's not God who's sovereign, who else could it be? And there's no answer to that. Because we know that God is sovereign over Satan. Because everybody wants to answer, well, it's Satan. Right? But that's not true. So go over to Luke chapter 22. And you know, Job says here, he says, if the scourge slays suddenly, he laughs at the plight of the innocent. Do you think God was laughing at Job's plight while all this is going on? No. What do you think, Job? What do you think God's doing? He's grieving with him, but what else do you think he's doing? You think he's got a cheerleader up in heaven? I bet he does. I bet you they're all going, come on, Job. Come on, Job. Stick with it. I mean, imagine that. And you know, the angels are watching this. They're watching everything that's happened to Job. And think about this. In Luke 22, verse 31, the Lord said, Jesus says, "Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat." And this "you," by the way, is plural. It's he's asked for the disciples. But it's focusing on Peter. He apparently, the way this reads, he asked for the disciples and God may have actually said no. Then he asked for Peter. And God said, okay. Sort of like he did with Job. Does that make sense? He says, "But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren." So what's Jesus doing in heaven for Job? He's praying for him. He's talking to the Father. "He's going to come through this, Dad. I told you. Just wait and watch. It's going to be really glorifying. He's going to do all this. He's going to be able to come through this." So Job goes on. He says in verse 25, back in Job 9, "Now my days are swifter than a runner." They're going fast. The prime of my life is running out, he says. "They flee away, they see no good. They pass by like swift ships, like eagles swooping in on its prey." So Job's going to come up with three solutions in light of the fact that he can't deal with God as he is. He can't see him. And his life's passing by. So solution number one, see if you ever done this one. Just grin and bear it. Y'all ever tried that solution? Doesn't work too well. Here's what he says. Verse 27, "If I say I will forget my complaint, I will put off my sad face and wear a smile. I am afraid of all my sufferings. I know that you will not hold me innocent. If I am condemned, then why do I labor in vain?" He says, can I move on and just put on a happy face? No, because I know you know me. We can't fake it. We can fake it with people. We can't fake it with God. Nor can we fake belief with God, like we talked about this morning. Here's the second solution. So I can't just grin and bear it. I can't move on and fake it. How about I clean myself? How about I make myself clean? How's that going to work? It doesn't work either, does it? Look at we'll look at verse 30 and 31. "If I wash myself with snow water and cleanse my hands with soap, yet you will plunge me into the pit and my own clothes will abhor me." I'm still going to be dirty, even though I wash myself with snow water. You can't get any more pure than snow water, right? He says, "But if I wash myself with that snow water and I cleanse my hands with soap, I'm still going to be dirty." So that doesn't work either. I can't fix it myself. Now, here we go. Here's solution number three. This one works. Watch this. He says, "For he is not a man, as am I, that I may answer him, and that we should go to court together." So understand, Job says he's not a man like I am. Do you think he wants him to be? He does.
At that time.
Yes, he does. He wants him to be a man. Why would he want God to be a man?
He would be more comfort to us if we could see him.
Yep. We would know he was there, just like Deborah said earlier. Would you think Job would have been comforted to look over to his right and see God sitting there? Yeah, wouldn't he? So he says, first of all, gosh, I wish he could be a man. Then we could talk face to face. Then we could reason with each other. I could listen to him instead of Bildad. Wouldn't that be awesome? You know, I'm sure that was going through his mind. He didn't say that, but. So the problem is that God's not a man. He wishes that God would become a man so he could walk with him and talk with him. And that's the reason Jesus came to earth. I know that before probably the first Christmas I was here, I played for you Paul Harvey the Bird. You guys remember that story? Where this guy's trying to get the birds to go into the barn and they won't go because he's not a bird. And then he tries to do all these things to get them to go. And then he realizes, if I was just a bird, they would go. Then the bells ring, right? It's a great story. But that's what he's thinking about. And then here we go to this. Look in the next verse, verse 33. Nor is there any mediator between us who may lay his hands on both of us. So Jesus said, Job said, I wish that God was a man, and I wish we had a mediator between us. So that mediator, anybody got the King James? What's your word in there?
Daysman,
yes. So literally, this is what the daysman would do. This is what he would do. And he would solve conflicts. He would put his hands on both people, and he would solve their conflicts.
Bring them together.
So Job says, man, I just wish that he was a man. I wish that we had a mediator. Now that gets fulfilled in Jesus Christ too. 1 Timothy 2:5. Go over there. First Timothy 2:5 says, for there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. So Jesus Christ, this is just awesome. I hope you guys get this. Job is looking forward to saying, I need a man. I need someone that I can relate to. I need someone that can relate to me, and I need him to be a mediator. Because I cannot fix my own situation. I can't wash myself clean, and I can't just grin and bear it. That ain't going to work. My only solution is I got to have a man and a mediator that could put his hand on me and could put his hand on God and bridge the enormous gap that exists. That's what Jesus Christ does. And again, you think, oldest book in the Bible, these salvation gospel concepts are coming out. He says, we had this mediator who would lay his hands on us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and do not let dread of him terrify me. Then means if I had the mediator, right? Then I would speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me. I don't have a mediator. We have a mediator. We need to appreciate that we have a mediator. Jesus Christ is in heaven advocating for us every single day. Now, Satan gets to go up there and be our accuser too, right? But what does Jesus say when Satan accuses? Lord, I got him. We got to remember that. So isn't that awesome? Y'all, I mean, we should really stop there. But isn't that awesome? You see what Job's saying? And don't you feel the same way? Why did the Jews look forward to their Messiah so much? They had the whole sacrificial system. Only worked for a year, right? What's the Messiah? What was the Messiah going to do for the Jews? What? He's going to be among them. He was going to forgive them of their sins. He was going to remove all transgressions. The things that he's done for us. He was going to bring freedom to the captives. He was going to heal the sick. Lift their burden. That's why they kept looking for him. The Jews haven't changed. They're still looking, unfortunately, for their Messiah. They're still looking for this mediator. They're still looking for what Job was looking for. We have that in the person of Jesus Christ. So, all right, we'll start on 10. So, chapter 10, he says, he's got four questions you're going to see. So, verses 1 through 3, he wants to know, why are you against me? So we'll go as far as we can. Why are you against me? He says, my soul loathes my life. I hate my life. I will give free course to my complaint. I'm going to speak. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say to God, we ever heard this? Do not condemn me. Show me why you contend with me. So why are you against me is what he's saying. Does it seem good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands? You get what he's saying there? You made me. Does it seem good to you that you're putting all this pressure on me and smile on the counsel of the wicked? Job realizes he's the work of God's hands. He realizes God's in control of all of this. He's like, why are you doing this? Is this a good idea? What's your plan? And look, we can ask that question. There is nothing scripturally wrong with asking that question. John the Baptist asked it. Job asked it. We can ask this. And you know what? Sometimes God will answer that question. Because if we do it the right attitude is, God, I want to know why you're doing this so that I can react the right way, so that I can bring glory to you. Job ultimately gets there, 30 more chapters, but he gets there. So that's the first question. Why are you doing this to me? The second question is over in verses 4 through 7. Why do you watch me? This is a comforting one and a scary one for some people. Look what he says. Do you have eyes of flesh? Or do you see as a man sees? Are your days like the days of a mortal man? Are your years like the days of a mighty man? That you should seek for my iniquity and search out my sin, although you know that I am not wicked, and there is no one who can deliver from your hand. See it again? You know that I am not wicked, and you know that you have absolute power over me. So why? What's going on? But this is an amazing confession. When somebody's going through this much pain, this much loss, this much sorrow, Job can look back at God and say, you know, you made me like that. You made me like I am. I'm your creation. You know I'm not wicked. Search my heart. You know I'm not wicked. And I'm in your hands. That's an awesome thing to say. And that is a great place to be. You know, we all sang the old song when we were kids. He's got the whole world in his hands, right? Is that true? It is. It is. So that's question number two. Why do you watch me? What are you looking for? He says, you know, you're looking for my sin. You're searching out my sin. Question three in verses 8 to 17 is, why did you create me? So he's building up. Did you create me for this? Why did you create me? He says in verse 8, your hands have made me and fashioned me. There you go. God created us. Also an idea there that the way that's worded, that you made me and fashioned me, talking about being knit together in the womb like the other writers talk about. That's talking about life beginning at conception. An intricate unity, yet you would destroy me. He's giving God the credit again. Remember, I pray that you have made me like clay, and will you turn me into dust again? Did you not pour me out like milk and curdle me like cheese? Clothe me with skin and flesh and knit, here we go again, knit me together with bones and sinews? You have granted me life and favor, and your care has preserved my spirit. You see a praise in there? Your care has preserved my spirit. This is a man sitting on top of the trash heap who's lost everything, but he still gives God credit for his care preserving his spirit. And these things you have hidden in your heart. I know that this was with you. If I sin, then you mark me and will not acquit me of my iniquity. If I am wicked, woe to me. Even if I am righteous, I cannot lift my head. I am full of disgrace. See my misery. If my head is exalted, you hunt me like a fierce lion. And again, you show yourself awesome against me. You renew your witnesses against me and increase your indignation towards me. Changes and war are ever with me. So he says, you made me, and it's getting worse. Look what he says in verse 17. This is the climax. You're bringing these witnesses against me. You've apparently gotten madder at me for some reason, and changes and war are ever with me. This battle imagery is talking about how he feels. He feels just under this amazing amount of pressure. So understand what he says. I know that you're doing all this. I know you created me. I know you're watching me. I know you're in complete control. So what's his next logical step? If I'm so bad, why don't you just kill me? Exactly. And that is exactly the fourth question. Why don't you just kill me? Why then have you brought me out of the womb? Oh, that I had perished and no eye had seen me. I would have been as though I had not been. I would have been carried from the womb to the grave. Are not my days few? Cease, leave me alone, that I may take a little comfort before I go to the place from which I shall not return, to the land of darkness and the shadow of death, a land as dark as darkness itself, where the shadow of death without any order, where even the light there is like darkness. So he's like, why don't you just kill me? This is pretty drastic talk. Now, we also know that he understands, he knows he's going to die. That's what he's talking about. He understands later, we've read already, he knows he's going to be resurrected, but he's talking about now going to what we would call Sheol, the place of the dead. That's what the Old Testament people called it. He says, why don't you just kill me? That was his response to get out of this problem again. But he didn't say, I'm going to kill myself. Okay? He said, look, I despise my life, but I understand that my life is still in your hands. And I want to know why you brought me out of the womb. You brought me out of the womb for a reason. What was it? What purpose do you have in my life? And God, you sit up there and you think about all the people throughout history who have benefited from Job. And, does Job know his purpose now? Yes, he does. And that ought to be awesome. That would be awesome. Just the moment that he realized, God did use me to do this. We talked, I think, last week, would you go, I wish you could have picked somebody else, but thanks, But probably didn't even say that. He's probably just in awe of the way he was used. He's helping people, 4,500 years later deal with problems. He's helping us understand who God is and how we are to worship Him. And I bet you every single one of us has gone through this same kind of questioning of God. Maybe we've used slightly different words. Why are you putting me through this, God? Why are you letting this happen to me? Right? We've all used those. Why did you make me if I'm going to have to go through this? If my life is going to be this miserable, why was I even born? We've all said stuff like that. Probably. And Job is going to show us how we answer that. God's going to show us through Job how we answer those. So understand what's going on. Job is fighting back against this system. And he says, man, nothing's going to work without a man between us who works like a mediator. He's got to be a man because he's got to understand everything I'm going through. He's got to be a man so I can talk to him, so I can relate to him. But I don't have that man. And we all sit there and go, we do. We ought to feel sorry for Job at this point and think, man, if Job just knew about Jesus Christ, remember, he's going to name Jesus Yahshua by name later. He's going to call him his salvation. But he doesn't understand yet that he does have a mediator, that he will have that mediator. So he's struggling to find out. And we that's why we have the Bible, folks. God gave us the Bible. It's a love letter. It's a revelation. The entire thing is a revelation about Jesus Christ. And we ought to just be so thankful that we have that. Could you imagine if Job had the book of Job? Kind of been a little odd, but, I understand what's going on. Let me slip, like we all do, let me flip to the end and see how it turns out. Oh, okay, I'm going to get restored. No, he didn't have that. We do. We can look at that and see how good God is. But understand, it's just like in this new study we've started with the teens, I ask them questions, and they're hard questions. And God's asking us hard questions. This morning, people think, oh, that I heard, that was such a simple sermon. Yep. But it was such a tough question. And if you don't think it was a tough question, you didn't listen very well. So it is that, who do you say I am, is a very tough question. Will you act for my honor? Will you live for my glory? Will you honor me in all things? Is a very tough question today. Will you stand by me when you lose everything? That's the question he's asking to us through Job. And I pray that we can do that. So next week we have no evening service. Then the next week we're going to do that question and answer about apologetics.